Thank you for joining our podcast. We hope that this message will both teach and encourage you. Here's today's message.
Okay. For those of you that were involved or would like to be involved in prayer on Wednesday morning, we pray from 6 to 7. And so that's starting back up tomorrow morning. Bright and medium early. Yes. So spread the good news. Yeah, we'll be back to praying. We spend time learning about prayer, and we're going to be doing some more learning about prayer and looking at some biblical examples, and then at the same time, actually praying. I know that's a novel idea. There's prayer breakfast and prayer groups all the time that form up, it seems, and then what they really meant was after breakfast and talking for an hour, we pray for 2 minutes and then we leave. Well, we actually pray for an hour and then go to breakfast. So if you'd like to join us, we go somewhere for breakfast for a little while before everybody has to go off to work. So we'll be focusing in on things like the government of Lake Worth, the schools of Lake Worth, and the people in leadership, issues and needs in the area, because we're loving Lake Worth and we're that we praying that we become a church that moves to Capernaum. We're a Capernaum-style church where Jesus can come in and do anything and we're with him. Rather than a Jerusalem-style church, which is always looking down their nose at him, wondering what he's going to do next and where they can crucify him. Or worse, a Nazareth church where nobody wants to give him any credit or believe God for anything. And so we're going to be spending some time together in prayer and believe that we have seen some wonderful fruit off of that. It will transform your individual life. It will transform our life as a congregation. So I just wanted to give a shameless plug for that. So we'll roll right here into the 12th chapter of Exodus. And we're going to talk about what's going on here with the departure. How many of you know the name of the book we're studying? Exodus. And it means basically exiting, leaving, getting out, right? Departure. So here we move into the 12th chapter, and things have been building, haven't they, to this moment. To put it lightly, the Lord has really been putting a hurt on all the gods and goddesses of Egypt. In every which way, they have been shamed and been shown to be nothing. And at the same time, he's been revealing himself to the Israelites, to the Egyptians, and to Pharaoh. But what kind of response is he getting from the leadership of Egypt? Hearts are hardened. Are some of the leaders kind of saying, enough's enough, we need to go ahead and they need to go bye-bye? And in fact, the leadership is really looking at Pharaoh saying, you have lost your mind. You are utterly and completely wrecking Egypt. So, we move into the 12th chapter. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in Egypt, this month is to be for you the first month. So, in other words, he's saying, Happy New Year. Okay? He is now going to institute, he's going to do something with the calendar. This is going to be the thing that marks the first day of the year. So the first month, of the year for the Jews, okay? So this is going to be important. It would be as if July the 4th would become New Year's, because that's when officially, technically, the United States declared independence. And then it was in the 1791 that the Bill of Rights and everything else was passed and everything else was finished up. But we had a Declaration of Independence, which is what we celebrate in July 4th. So it would be like America would have changed their calendar so that January 1 was actually the old July the 4th. Well, we didn't do anything quite that pivotal, but He says, this month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel. So is God changing time or what? Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, so now we're going to say first month of the year, 10th day, and by the way, I need to add this in here. What does the word month relate to? Moon. Okay? That's where we get the idea of month. And so we have what's called lunar calendars, and you have solar calendars. So you have lunar and solar. The Islamic calendar is a lunar, exclusively a lunar calendar. So it shifts all over the place. The Israeli calendar, or Jewish calendar, is a lunar solar calendar. It's actually a hybrid with adjustment. And the Western world follows the Gregorian Julian solar calendar. Okay? So, exclusively lunar would be Islam. Somewhere in here, Israel. Over here, rest of the world. Eventually. Now, before that, people marked their calendar by the birth of a certain king, the death of a certain king, and things like that. So, Korean calendars and Japanese calendars and Chinese calendars and all those other ones are different. And the famous one from Mesoamerica, the Mayan calendar, was based on some basically a solar calendar. So, so we get the word month from the word moon, okay? And what is supposed to be the first day of the month for the Jew, how do you know it's the first day of the month? Because you go and look on your calendar hanging on the wall, right? No, that's not how you do it. How do you know when it's the first day of the moon? A new moon. And how do you know it's a new moon? It's just a sliver of moon that appears at sunset when visible from Jerusalem. That is the first day of the month. Okay? So, what is the middle day of the month? Full moon. Because how many days are there in a lunar month? 28. Okay? So right here, the first month of the year, you have the first day. So the first day, you've got, instead of, here's the moon if it's full, but all you have is this little sliver. It's a new moon. Okay? On the 14th, you have on the 7th, right? Because the full cycle is, and then back to the dark of the moon. Right? Was the dark of the moon on the 5th of June in a Jimmy Hall and Hogs cab over Pete with a reefer on. And no, anyway, that's an old song called Convoy. How many of you remember that song, right? That's a that was on the dark of the moon. So on the Jewish calendar, it would have been the 28th of the month. But it might not have been, because what do you have with a solar versus lunar? You have 31 days in some month, 30 days in others, 28 in February. Unless it's a leap year, then you have 29, because you got to make up for that 365 and a quarter. Right? Now, here's just a total bonus. It's believed amongst young earth creationists, and I'll just say, I wouldn't have any problem believing this whatsoever, that the earth, because of the flood of Noah, remember we studied that earlier in the book of Genesis? This all connects, believe me, okay? Trust me. This all connects. Some of you are going, wait a minute, what are you doing going back to Genesis? We're in Exodus. There's no hope now. Is that the earth rotates. It's running just over 1,000 miles an hour, right, spinning. And it's moving around the sun. And it takes how many days to complete an orbit around the sun? 365 and a quarter. Now, during the flood of Noah, because the earth was mostly land and little water, now it's mostly water and little earth, it is believed that much of the crust of the earth has been subsumed under the oceans and is closer now to the mantle because that five-eighths of a mile band of water that used to suspend the crust of the earth is now gone. So the earth has decreased by five-eighths of a mile in diameter. And that has resulted in it spinning slightly faster. And so as a result, what it used to move at would have been different, and now it's changed speeds. And so this calculation between lunar and solar calendar would have not have been in place then because they were identical. Wouldn't that have been great? Wouldn't it be great to live on an earth where you could have one solar year and one lunar year coincide? It would just solve a lot of mysteries about what is that date? What is that? Why do we have to adjust that? Why do we have, you literally have to have a spreadsheet with a calculator to build in to take a Jewish date and year and have it convert it to something that we understand. Now, what year is it on the Jewish calendar right now? 5779? Pretty close. So, and they're counting that on the Jewish calendar from what date? 5,778 years from the date of creation. Creation in the Jewish calendar. That's what they're reckoning that from. Through the flood of Noah, through Abraham, through the Babylon captivity, through David, all that stuff, and up to the present day. So you have to do a lot of mathematics and all kinds of stuff so that when somebody asks a simple question like, what day of the week was Jesus crucified on? If you ask the modern religion, they will say, Friday, Good Friday, right? But the answer really is, well, it depends. It depends on when the Jewish feast fell, when was the full moon, and you have to go through a lot of tables and things to figure out what day of the week. The answer to that is actually, it was a Thursday. But that would make us have to reprint all kinds of fancy cards and everything. Well, it's because you're going back and trying to figure out the feasts and where they fell. And so, no, I'm just saying, and the second thing is there's two different calendars within Judaism. As if it wasn't difficult enough. You can't even get them to agree on the calendar. What year it is, what month it is, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of dispute there. Not necessarily. Calendars were hard because it depends on where you were counting it from. And somewhere there were some people who began to lose track. A lot of error came in Babylon and in amongst the Pharisees. So why did I say all of that? I said all of that because that's where we get the name month. There may have been a time that they were completely synchronized and it wouldn't have mattered, sun or moon. But now God is telling them, you're going to celebrate. So in the Bible, when it talks about it being the first day of the month or the new moon, that means the moon is dark except for the slightest sliver. Remember, in God's economy, things start with darkness. Evening, then morning, and that was the first day, right? The Jews start with sunset, or 6:23, just before sunset. That begins the new day. And then they celebrate that day, light coming out of the darkness. And so that's very important to them. and it connects back to Genesis 1:1, Genesis 1:2. Okay, so it really connects somewhere. This is not just mumbo jumbo appearing out of thin air. And so what he tells him is, you are going to count this as the first month of the year, and now he says, and how will we know? Because it's got the faintest sliver of a new moon appearing out of the darkness. That is the first day. The first month of your year. Everybody say your year. Okay, so it's not going to be the Egyptian year, because if he's giving them a year, it's for them as a people. Your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family, one for each household. If any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one with their nearest neighbor. So, rather than waste a lamb, gang up. So if you have a family of two, and it takes a family of six to consume a whole lamb, then you get three families of two, get them together in one house, and use one lamb. Let's not waste. And here's the beautiful thing. Let's share. So let's make this a thing of sharing. They must share one with their nearest neighbor, having taken into account the number of people there are. You are to determine the amount of lamb needed in accordance with what each person will eat. The animals you choose must be year-old males without defect. And you may take them from the sheep or the goats. Oh, okay. Bless you guys. We love us some Pruitts. Okay, the animals you choose must be year-old males without defect. How old the male? 1 year. Take care of them until the 14th day of the month. Okay? When all the members of the community of Israel must slaughter them at twilight. Twilight is significant because it's the end of the day and it's going into the next day at twilight. Then they are to take some of the blood and put it on the sides and tops of the door frames of the houses where they eat the lamb. So we have this post, this post, this post, right? Can y'all see that? Doorpost and the lintel. Okay. That same night, they are to eat the meat roasted over the fire along with bitter herbs. Yum. Name for me a bitter herb. Horseradish, right? Tasha does not like horseradish. I think it's great on prime rib, but she doesn't think so. So what is that?
Cilantro.
Is that a bitter herb?
Yes.
Okay. Any others? Some people think parsley is bitter. Wasabi?
Oh.
Radish? Okay. And bread made without yeast. What happens when you make bread without yeast? It's flat. It's like pita. Right? Is pita bread without yeast? Okay. Why the bitter herbs? What have they just been in for 430 years? Or maybe less than that. Because it was good at first. But for the most part, what was it? Bitter. They cried out to the Lord in bitterness, right? And he heard their cry. So, do not eat the meat raw or boiled in water, but roast it over a fire with the head, legs, and internal organs. What did they normally do? They gutted it, field dressed it, removed all of the entrails, and quartered it, and then spit it, put it over a spit, didn't spit on it. Yeah, they spit it. They put it on a spit and roasted it, typically. So now it's just a whole skinned animal. Right. It's going to take some cooking till you get to eat. We're going to see that in a moment. So that's a great point. They kill it when?
Twilight.
They're not going to eat it. They can't eat it raw. They can't eat it boiled in water. What's the quickest way to get meat cooked?
Boiling.
Now it's boiling. You can boil it pretty quick. Boil a chicken versus roast it. You usually have to slow roast it. Because if you go too quick, what do you get? Charred exterior and raw interior. How many of you just love that? Crunchy on the outside and chewy on the inside. No, thank you. Do not leave any of it till morning. If some is left till morning, you must burn it. This is how you are to eat it. With your cloak tucked into your belt. With your cloak tucked into your belt. What did that mean?
Ready to go.
So, if a man normally has, how would a man with a robe typically run? He take the back, pull it up, tuck it into your belt, and make it into pants. Voila. So if you're going to go into battle, you're not going to go with your robe flying everywhere. So when the scripture talks about girding up your loins, what are you doing? You're taking this normal robe, you're grabbing it, putting it up in your belt, tying it in, and when, I just want to make sure I didn't draw on my shirt. I just felt what, and you put it in, and now you've made pants. Because if you're running and you're running in a robe, what do you risk?
Tripping
and exposure. Okay, it's like wearing a kilt during the Queen's inauguration. You have to sit with your kilt down and your legs crossed and pray it's not windy, because there could be something humiliating happen. So get that with your cloak tucked in your belt. So here's what they're doing. They're taking their cloak and tucking it in so they're ready for action. You're ready to go. Your sandals on your feet. Normally you'd have your sandals off. You take your sandals off and have your feet washed, right? They leave their sandals on and your staff in your hand. You're ready to go. Now, I don't know about at your house, but sometimes I've been sitting a lot during the day, so I get home and it's just, I don't mean to do it. It's just, I'm not even thinking. I'll go grab a plate. I'll fill it up there off the counter, and then I'll stand there and eat. Because I just don't want to sit down anymore. If I've been driving somewhere or something like that, it's like, I'm not interested in sitting. And Tasha will say, sit down with the rest of us like a normal family and eat. And it's like, why are you standing? I was like, well, I've been tired of sitting today. I just kind of wanting to stand. But it doesn't make it. Well, here's the psychological issue. It looks like I'm not ready to stay. I'm ready to go. And so standing at the ready, if you have your guests come over to eat and they leave their coats on and stand by the door and eat, you're like, it's like they're going to finish their plate, throw it down, and run out the door. What did I do? What did I say? That's nice potpourri. You know, the cat hasn't jumped on them. What's the deal? And so get that picture in your mind that they are girded up and ready to hit the door. Running. This is not a typical meal. Meals are for sitting down, hearing about the day, relating to one another, fellowshipping, kind of dropping your guard, but he asks them to do something which puts him on guard. Yes?
If we're all prepared to take off their flesh, why do we take so much trouble and time to cook meat?
Don't you think it's
to
fill them?
It's a hearty meat. And there's an emphasis on being prepared to go, right?
Part of the sacrifice, part of the cooking of the lamb in the Jewish mind, as God says, it is a fragrant scent to my nostrils.
Mm-hmm.
So that
And you're slaughtering an animal, right, according to a certain thing, and it's being cooked, and as Matt said, I don't know about you, but doesn't a burger smell good? They get me every time at Lowe's. All they have to do is put onion. Just put onion on the grill and a little salt and pepper. It's all you got to do. Onions are cheap. And it's human attraction magnet. And the wind blows it inside the door when you're standing at the check stand. And you go, the grill's working. And so some days when I'm planning on getting a bratwurst on my way out the door, I'll go by and say, be sure you're cooking some onions. Because I want some cooked onions on my bratwurst. And one of the most shameful words I've ever heard out of them, we ran out of onions. How can you do that? They're cheap and they're human magnets. They'll draw people in who will just be reaching into their wallet and handing money to you and begging you for whatever you have over there if you'll just put some onions with it. So that smell, the Lord describes that smell as a sweet aroma ascending up before the Lord. So it sounds to me like the Lord enjoys the smell of a great steak cooking, or hamburgers, or lamb burgers. Yeah. So, at least the Jewish quarter. Now, for those of you that came early, I think maybe all of us were here. Did you notice he's talking about how close the land of Goshen was to P. Ramses? And the remember we talked about the royal palace? They're not that far away from where the Pharaoh is going to go down and check the river. So he says, now, eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. Not sitting down slowly, standing up quickly. So this is, I guess, one time it's okay to wolf. Right? Slow down and taste it. No, eat it in haste. This is about getting it in you for the departure. Because your departure is at hand. And there, throughout Scripture, we get this idea that leaving, when the Lord wants you to leave, it's really important to do so quickly. We know that Lot's wife dragged it out. Right? We know that the idea in the New Testament is that when the wise virgins hear the sound of the bridegroom, what are they supposed to do? Get up, go quickly. Have their lamps trimmed, ready to go, and plenty of oil. Because they don't have time to go get more oil. It's time to go. And so there's that picture of immediacy that you need to be ready. When it's time to go, go. On that same night, I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn of both people and animals, and I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord. I am Yahweh. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are. So what's the sign to them? The blood. Notice it's here over the lintel, here on the side, here on the side. I can't help but think that there's got to be some that's fallen on the ground too. Right? Yeah, they're using a hyssop branch. So, what does that remind you of? Now, this is important because the ancient... Remember I told you that we'll look at things from 30,000 feet, and at times we'll talk about Hebrew? The last letter of the Hebrew alphabet in modern script looks like this. What is that? The Tav or the Ta? Okay? It's the last letter. The ancient Hebrew letter, the Paleo-Hebrew version. That's modern script. Okay? The Paleo meaning ancient Hebrew script that was found on stones. On stones. In fact, in graveyards of Jewish people who were buried was the Paleo-Hebrew cross. And it's the sign or the mark of covenant. It's the mark of covenant.
This is my covenant.
So this person has covenant with me. And so the process of touching this to here, and in the activity you've got it hitting on the ground, emulates a cross. And isn't that fascinating that the Roman form of torture is the crucifix? Right? The crucis. Las Cruces, New Mexico. The cross.
Santa Cruz,
right? Santa Cruz, California. Holy Cross. So that is in the Latin. And so this cross, whether it was like this, and in some cases like this, was the mark of covenant. And so the Jewish gravestones would have a cross on them. Why? Because they were recipients of a covenant with God.
They observed the covenant.
And so he says this will be a sign. He calls this a sign. Right? It's a sign. Okay. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over. If I don't see the blood, I won't pass over. And what's the only reason for me to come to your house on this night? To kill the firstborn. Now, imagine being able to go into a house and select the firstborn and take out only the firstborn. That's amazing accuracy of persons and animals. So, and everybody knows which of their animals is the firstborn, and a male, and which of the family household is firstborn male. And so all you have to do is have somebody die that isn't a firstborn male, and it, what? I thought, this is not very accurate. But he says, this is how intensely accurate he makes it. No destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt. This is a day you are to commemorate. For the generations to come, you shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance. For 7 days you are to eat bread made without yeast. On the first day, remove the yeast from your houses, for whoever eats anything with yeast in it from the first day through the seventh must be cut off from Israel. So the first day of the month, right? So he's saying basically day 1 through 7 of this month is for unleavened bread. No yeast. How does yeast work? Anybody explain me real quick? Hold on. One of these ladies. I know that sounds totally gender biased and sexist, but any of you bakers and cookers, I know 2-3 of you here. How do yeast work?
They reproduce. They give off gas.
Okay. It's a form of a bacteria. You purposely put it in your dough. And what is it in your dough that the yeast like? Sugars. And when they eat the sugar, what then does the yeast do? It emits flatulence. Sorry.
Carbon dioxide.
And then all of that builds up and puts air pockets all through that dough. It inserts air into the dough until it takes up more space, and then when you bake it, what do you get? Fluffy, delightful, wonderful bread. What's that? Part bread. Okay. Flatulence bread.
As the yeast interacts with the sugars, it also ferments, creating alcohols.
Right.
The alcohols permeate as well and have the effect.
And they create some of the smells and some of the aromas. So when it's all baked, okay, it's just a wonderful experience of this. But when you don't have yeast in your bread, what do you get when you put it on the hot griddle?
Tortilla.
A tortilla. That's what you get. You get very flat bread. And it's still good, but for 5,000 years of human history, people have preferred dentists say by 5-1. I don't know. I don't know what the number was. But there was a people preferred fluffy bread, especially the French. And so we don't want flatbread. But if you were on the move and didn't have time to do that, then you had to, flatbread stayed longer. You could throw it on the griddle, make a quick Johnny cake of some kind, peel it off, throw another one on there, or a hot rock, and you could cook, you could get that bread baked quickly right around a campfire. So, right. So, what were they to do? They were supposed to go remove the yeast from your houses, and for whoever eats anything with yeast in it from the first day through the seventh must be cut off from Israel. So they did something for 7 days. They cleaned their house. This is one of the reasons we have the concept of spring cleaning, by the way. It's actually a Jewish concept. What's that, Rick? Rick is going to get in trouble over there. Somebody's going to slap a knot on him. So, yeah. Cameron, do you have something to say? Exactly. So there's an analogy here, right? So it, what develops later in the Jewish households is it becomes a game where the father takes a candle, a feather, a spoon, and takes his children and says, we have to go find the leaven. We cannot have any leaven in our house. And then they would go, Mama would purposely leave some leavened bread somewhere, and they would find it, and they would take the feather and dust it up into the spoon, put the feather, wrap it in cloth, and then go outside the house and burn it. Now, the application was, we want to make sure that we look very carefully in our hearts and make sure that there is no wicked way, there is no sin in us. There's nothing displeasing to God. We get it out, and what do we do with it? There's only one answer: burn it, and we forsake it. And so this was something that God is teaching them right from the jump, that this is a sign for you. This is important that you do this because it's going to teach you and your young people something. He says on the, and he says if you do, you're cut off from Israel. On the first day, hold a sacred assembly, and another one on the seventh day. Do no work at all on these days except to prepare food for everyone to eat. That is all you may do. Celebrate the festival of unleavened bread, because it was on this very day that I brought your divisions out of Egypt. Celebrate this day as a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. In the first month, you are to eat bread made without yeast from the evening of the 14th day until the evening of the 21st day. For 7 days, no yeast is to be found in your houses, and anyone, whether foreigner or native-born, who eats anything with yeast in it must be cut off from the community of Israel. That doesn't mean go out and stone them or kill them, that they're isolated from them. Eat nothing made with, eat nothing made with yeast. Wherever you live, you must eat unleavened bread. Then Moses summoned all the elders of Israel. So what we find is the idea of unleavened bread and Passover coincide. Now, something that we can connect to, how many of you like some help understanding some things in the Gospels? Okay. When Jesus enters Jerusalem, during what feast does he enter Jerusalem riding? Not Passover. Unleavened bread. He comes in on unleavened bread. Where does he immediately go . He goes and visits the temple. And what does he do? He grabs a whip and he runs the money changers out of the temple. What's he doing? He's investigating the leaven and getting the leaven out of Father's house. Isn't that interesting? That's what he's doing. He has come. He is the light of the world. He comes into the temple, especially into the place of the court of the Gentiles, which is set up specifically so that people who are not Jews but are Gentiles and are pleased to worship Yahweh, Jehovah, fill in your favorite phrasing of how you say God's name, or God, that those who are supposed to come into this court of the Gentiles and worship Jehovah, Yahweh, God, they have set up a marketplace and cash registers and lines for the Jews as an overflow marketing center for the temple. Basically saying, well, normally you guys can be here, but not now. We're too busy. And they have actually forbidden the Gentiles any entrance to the temple. Now, is that a leaven situation or what? Do we have like hearken big? And Jesus often says to his disciples, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And they look at each other and go, he's ticked off because we didn't bring bread. No. They often missed it, right? Be encouraged because it's me riding in the boat with them going, he's mad because we didn't bring bread. No, no. He says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. They are prepared and looking great on the outside, but in the inside they're full of dead men's bones. They're unclean. They're worse than a whole house full of leaven during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So he goes into the temple and cleanses it. What's he doing? He is simply doing the unleavened bread thing. He's come in and said, there's not supposed to be any unleavened bread in here. And he cleans house. And he uses, in this case, a whip and some anger. And what does he get done? He cleans it up. He drives out. In fact, in Mark's Gospel, I think it's Mark's Gospel, he puts it this way. This, my Father's house is supposed to be a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it into a den of thieves. See? So he is outraged because Father's house, of all places, is full of leaven. And so what does he do? Well, he cleans it up. He just does what you do during the unleavened bread festival. So that'll help you to see why Jesus is doing what he's doing when he enters Jerusalem, because he's entering at the time of Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now, during what feast did he die? Passover. Why? Because he is our Passover. He is the Lamb of God. Behold, the Lamb of God, which takes away the sin of the world. And so, that's why Passover marks his death, but unleavened bread marks his entrance into Jerusalem with the showdown with the chief priests and with the elders. So, I enjoy going from here and jumping forward and help you, because what's important to me is that you make the connection. As you see, hey, this connects out later. Now, remember that this account is being written after the events with the understanding of a lot of things, and so it assumes things or is saying things without explanation because the audience that's reading this knows it. Okay, so the time markers sometimes don't quite jive because it's being spoken later to a group of people who understand it rather than simply being spoken to a group of people who are hearing it for the first time. And so, he says, take a bunch of hyssop, dip it into the blood in the basin, put some of the blood on the top and on both sides of the door frame. None of you shall go out of the door of your house until morning. And when the Lord goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the top and sides of the door frame and will pass over that doorway, and he will not permit the destroyer to enter your houses and strike you down. Oh, now, how many of you know it's really important to obey this?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh? What happens if you're Jewish, Israeli, Israelite, but you don't do this? No King's X, right? Time out. No. No mark. Firstborns die. Of animals and humans. Okay. That's firstborn male. Firstborn's an only born. Okay. That's especially heartbreaking to unnecessarily lose that. So obey these instructions as a lasting ordinance for you and your descendants. When you enter the land that the Lord will give you as he promised, observe this ceremony. So this ceremony is for specifically what people?
Israelites.
The Jews. Okay. And when your children ask you, what does this ceremony mean to you? Then tell them, it is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, who passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt and spared our homes when he struck down the Egyptians. Then the people bowed down and worshipped. What have they been doing up to this point? Having heartburn with Moses and Aaron, right? So, wow. What a different scene. There's already been how many plagues?
Nine.
This is about to be the tenth. And for the last six, they haven't been touched. So are the Israelites, does God have their attention? To the Israelites, God has made a difference between us and the Egyptians. To the Egyptians, God has made a difference between us Egyptians and those Israelites over there in Goshen, those slaves. So, at midnight, everybody say midnight. At midnight, so when is midnight, even to a Jewish person? Halfway between sunset and sunrise, which is generally speaking, midnight, 12 a.m., 12:15, 11:57, somewhere in there. It shifts back and forth. So the Lord struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on the throne. Now, is that important?
Yeah.
If the firstborn son of Pharaoh struck down?
Yes.
Why?
Because his firstborn inherits.
That's the heir apparent to the throne. To the firstborn of the prisoner who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all the livestock as well. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night, and there was loud wailing in Egypt, for there was not a house without someone dead. What's that? Well, but what if a man is the firstborn of that family, but he's now the husband of this home? So now daddy's dead, because he's the firstborn son of that family. And then the young son, that's the firstborn son of that Egyptian family, he's dead too. Yeah. And so the Egyptians do the math pretty quickly. Well, that's my firstborn son. 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 And that carries off over into the livestock. And so, during the night, up to this point in time, when does Pharaoh summon Moses, or Moses intersect with Pharaoh? Sunrise, sometime during the morning, right? Time to go check the river, take your bath, secretly go to the bathroom, whatever it is that the Pharaoh is doing, and Moses goes and intercepts him, right? Now, during the night, so does somebody have their attention gotten by God? Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, up, leave my people, you and the Israelites, go. Worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said and go and bless me. That's a desperate Pharaoh. He's finally agreeing with God. Finally.
His own
Yeah. So all of Egypt has been touched, including the Pharaoh. So the Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country. What did God say? Tuck your cloak in. Get ready to go. Why? Because when I'm done here, nobody will want you around. And you can't dawdle. You can't fiddle around. You need to get out of town. Yeah. Evidently not. Yeah. So stuff's going on, and everybody's being affected by this. There's no one that's not being affected by it. Now, Scripture's saying there's not a house. So if the Bible says there's not a house, what does that mean? There's not a house. Otherwise, it would say there was just a few houses that weren't affected. The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise, they said, we will all die. This is the start. This is just the start. So the people took their dough. Now, that's not their money. They took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs wrapped in clothing. And the Israelites, why do you wrap in clothes? Keep the dust off, right? Nothing like eating bread that's got grit in it. Yuck. Imagine there being sand somewhere in Egypt. That's just astounding. The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, and the Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and they gave them what they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians. They're eager to get them out of town, and some people are totally sympathetic with them and saying basically secretly, Pharaoh's a jerk. We don't like Pharaoh. We can't say anything about it because he'll kill us. We think he's a jerk, and we think most of the people that work for him are losers and idiots. But what can we do?
Don't you think, too, that's why he killed the firstborn? So that even though those relationships are all over, there's a clear cut. Like, we can't be a part of you now because we see that that's going to hurt us, even though before it was just a beef with you and Pharaoh.
It's affecting everybody. Yeah. And it also says that God is no respecter of persons to a certain extent. Because Pharaoh gets taken down as well as the prisoner in the cell. Everybody's equal. Okay, so the Israelites journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, and there were about 600,000 men. Okay? On foot, besides women and children. It says 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. So on a conservative basis, how many of those guys have a wife? You want to give all of them a wife? How many of you, all of them get a wife, right? Well, now it's 1.2 million. How many kids are we going to give them? What's the average size of the Israelite family, do you think? I have no idea. I don't think there's a wrong answer per se. You want to give them three? You want to give them four kids per household? So now it's 1.2 million. That's just adults. And now you've got kids. Four times that, that's 2.4 million. So you have 3.8 million. Okay, let's do that. I'm doing it in my head. So let's go 1.2 mil is hubby and his wife, okay? And then we're going to take this, which is 2.4, 6, or 4 times 600,000, 2.4 million, is 3.6 million. No.
That wasn't kids.
This is the men.
Man
and wife, 600,000 men, 600,000 women.
Well, now let's not forget the Egyptians.
Right, we're just kind of lumping them in there and just kind of averaging it. So, a conservative estimate.
3.6
million. That's a conservative estimate. 3.6 million. Is that a lot of people? Ah, That's a lot of people. What's that?
In the day, it was a
whole lot. It was a whole lot of people.
That's Los Angeles County.
So, yeah. If you take Dallas-Fort Worth and you take all of the broadcasting area for Channel 4, Channel 5, Channel 8, Channel 11, PBS, whatever's your favorite over-the-air station, I don't know. You're gonna hit that many people. That's 40 miles wide, maybe 60 miles wide, 3,600 square miles in Texas. We spread out. There, you can stack right on top of everybody and stick them within a couple blocks, and there they are. Just like in India, just like in other places, okay? So they weren't Texas. They weren't Texans where everybody needs 40 acres and a mule or 150 acres or a quarter of a section, 250 acres and a couple mules. And so many, and notice this in verse number 38, I love this. Many other people, look there, many other people. So it's not just Israelites. Are there other people in Israel? Yes. There's other people from other nations that are there. What's that? They're getting out with Moses. So we often overlook this. We think that people celebrated the Passover were only Jewish. There were other people that went with them. Yeah, and they said, we're with you. We're with you. We're out of Egypt with you. And so if we're not careful, we miss that. There were other people.
Well, it's so like modern Israel. You have Palestinians, you have Druze, you have Arabs.
Yeah, you have many, many kinds of people. So many other people went up with them, and also large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. So it's not just people.
Animals.
You got animals. And with the dough the Israelites had brought from Egypt, they baked loaves of unleavened bread. And the dough was without yeast because they had been driven out of Egypt and did not have time to prepare food for themselves. They were ready, though. God made them ready, didn't he? Now, the length of time the Israelites lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years to the very day, all the Lord's divisions left Egypt because the Lord kept vigil that night to bring them out of Egypt. On this night, all the Israelites are to keep vigil to honor the Lord for the generations to come. So what do? They pull an all-nighter. And they eat around midnight because that's when the angel passed over. So while the Israelites are eating the lamb, the angel's passing over their door because he sees the sign, and the Egyptians' firstborn are all going down. That's what's happening. So they're all ready to go. So it's in the middle of the night when Pharaoh says, it's still dark. Out. Out of here. So the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, these are the regulations for the Passover meal. Now he's talking about when? Future. No foreigner may eat it. Any slave you have bought may eat it after you have circumcised him, but a temporary resident or a hired worker may not eat it. He's speaking of when they come into their land of promise. Once they come into Canaan land, this is the rules. Where are they now? Leaving Egypt. So is the Lord merciful? Yes, he is. It must not be eaten inside the house. Take none of the meat outside the house. Do not break any of the bones. The whole community of Israel must celebrate it. A foreigner residing among you who wants to celebrate the Lord's Passover must have all the males in his household circumcised. Then he may take part like one born in the land. No uncircumcised male may eat it. The same law applies both to the native-born and to the foreigner residing among you. And all the Israelites did just what the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron. And on that very day, the Lord brought the Israelites out of Egypt by their divisions. And what are their divisions?
Their tribes.
They're divided up as quick, from firstborn to lastborn. No. What's the firstborn?
Reuben.
The lastborn?
Benjamin.
Okay. So, and then Ephraim is Joseph's tribe, and they're divided in half with Ephraim and Manasseh. Right? So. I don't know. I don't know how they handle it. Who they led into a Seder or not. Depends on if you're Orthodox, Neo-Orthodox, how you practice. Oh, well, that's different. That's Messianic.
Right, but is that still in...
Amongst Orthodox Jews?
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. That's
yeah. Orthodox, definitely. Yep, definitely. So, we got through one chapter. There's a lot of detail there, though. And let's be fair, there's some stuff that we're going to connect to later going forward that we need to say, okay, remember we talked about this, it was Passover. So we're going to take, what I'm going to do is we can take a break here. You can freshen your drink, go to the restroom. At the same time, I'm going to put on a video for the last part here that's going to actually kind of cheat ahead, but that's okay because it's going to help kind of help us track two things. We can do this next week when we talk about the routes that they took, possible routes that they took on the Exodus, this group of 3 million people and their animals. Okay? So, if you want to freshen up a drink there, and I'm going to take this. Yes, you have a question or comment? That is what's called the... Somebody's going to have to help me pronounce this because I know it and I can write it. Anachronistic. This is an anachronism, which is showing you something that has been already said earlier and putting it in the context of the Passover. He's told them all along, I'm going to judge the gods of Egypt. And that's what we see in the first nine. Pharaoh is considered to be a god, and now his firstborn is dead, and so this has been a series, but as we discussed it 2 weeks ago or last week, it's the idea of these unseen realm people, these beings of influence, of fallen principalities that are in league with Lucifer, the god of this world, who are seeking worship from these people that are all going to be judged. They're all going to be shown exposed. Another way to say judged is to be exposed for what they really are and what they don't know and aren't able to guarantee. So they're going to be publicly humiliated and embarrassed by a direct onslaught by Jehovah, sparing none of them. And has that happened? That has thoroughly and completely happened. So, yes, every god and goddess of Egypt, without exception, was taken down with the first nine plagues.
And then plague number 10 was Pharaoh.
Does number 10 mean something like 5 or 7? Yes, 10 is very significant.
Hello.
Great question.
My name is O.
10 is a very important number. It talks about an utter or completeness. So we have the Ten Commandments. We have the 10 plagues. So it's not like the number 3, which is seven, which is fullness and provision, but it's the number 10, like with the number 12, 120. That's a very important number. And so it's a number of utter completeness. Five is grace. Five is literally the letter He in Hebrew, which is a number 5, which is the letter that's inserted in Sarai and Abram's name by God, which is showing that His grace has come upon their life. So, all right, so